From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is the Leonard Lopate Show. I'm Leonard Lopate, and this is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
For years, Ivor Van Heerden, a disaster specialist at Louisiana State University, warned of an impending catastrophe in New Orleans, and he was ignored. Now, after his worst fears have come true, people have finally started listening to him. Mr. Van Heerden is co-founder and deputy director of the LSU Hurricane Center. He's also the author of a new book called The Storm, What Went Wrong and Why During Hurricane Katrina. It's published by Viking. I'm very pleased to welcome him to my show today. Hello.
Thank you very much.
Katrina has been described as the worst natural disaster ever to strike this country. Is that accurate, do you think?
It's accurate in terms of the size of the disaster financially. You know, the damage to the Louisiana economy and even to our U.S. economy. In terms of numbers killed, it's probably the third biggest of the storms.
But could we also call it a man-made disaster? Or is it only a natural disaster?
No, this definitely has a man-made component to it. You know, Katrina was a severe meteorological event, if you will, but what really sunk New Orleans was the failure of the levee system.
Did you see it coming? Were you doing computer modeling?
Yes, we started modeling about almost 48 hours before landfall, and about 30 hours before landfall, we put out a computer model run with the surge, showing that New Orleans would flood, that the surge would overtop the levees.
And who did you tell that to?
That went to state, local government, and federal government officials. It was then used at the State Emergency Operations Center to brief all the assembled folk, which included FEMA officials. And then we put it out to a large number of folk via email.
And we heard about it on the news, the general public, and yet the government seems to not have really realized what was happening. Did they just not believe you? They think you were a boy crying wolf?
It's a very difficult question because it's so frustrating. Certainly, the local officials in the New Orleans understood exactly what we were talking about. And some of them acted very, very responsibly. They took that data and they went to low-lying areas and they started pulling people out and moving them to higher ground, you know, those who couldn't move. It's my understanding that that data even got as far as the White House on late Saturday or early Sunday morning, but it seems to have been totally ignored.
Ed Link, who's leading the task force for the Army Corps of Engineers to figure out what went wrong, recently said there were no engineering shortcomings. But you say you knew there were serious problems with the levees. Would those problems have been obvious to anyone who knew what to look for?
What I had seen before Katrina was segments of the levees that had sagged, you know, where the wall was no longer as high. It had a very distinct sag, maybe a foot and a half. In addition, when you just looked at those levees, you know, their slenderness, they didn't look like very robust structures. So we really fear that they could potentially fail, and we did warn in our emails that the levees could go, and reminded folk that they'd done that in 1965.
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers built some of those levees, didn't they? It's been said that one of the problems was that the piles didn't go deep enough into the soil to keep them steady.
Those levees were designed and constructed by the Corps of Engineers, and What's very obvious to us was in doing the design, they didn't recognize how weak the soils were. And part of that was they didn't put the sheet piling in deep enough.
So what would you have wanted to see done to the levees to prevent an event like that? And would it have been possible, considering the fact that the pilings didn't go deep enough?
Well, you know, the Corps got it right initially. On many of these levees, they called for a very robust T-wall, which is, if you will, has three lots of piles. It's like the letter A. It's very difficult to push it over, as against what they put in the ground, which were I-walls, which is like the letter I. It's very easy to topple over. So initially, they had these very robust designs, but they changed it to the I-walls. If I had had my way, they would have been all T-walls and in many cases substantially wider earthen berms.
Hadn't Congress allotted a fair amount of money to improve the levees, then the work wasn't done?
Congress had supplied quite a lot of money initially and after the 1965 authorization, to the point that the Corps wasn't spending it all every year. So there was very good funding initially. Towards the end, they weren't getting the funding they were requesting.
My guest is Ivor van Heerden, and he's written with the help of Mike Bryan, The Storm, What Went Wrong and Why During Hurricane Katrina, the inside story from one Louisiana scientist, which is published by Viking. This is WNYC 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. You had been warning people about a disaster of this sort for a long time, hadn't you?
Since 1995. It was the first time I started telling folk that we were very susceptible to these sorts of disasters.
And when you say folk, whom were you trying to warn?
Anybody who would listen to me.
How much authority did you have?
Well, initially in 1995, I was actually running the state's coastal restoration program as a senior a political appointee for the governor. So I had fair authority, but at that stage, we couldn't put numbers on it. Once I got out of that, it took a while for us to get a hurricane center established and then to find the funding. But for the last 5 years, we've been able to put numbers. We've been able to show models and graphics. And so the last 5 years, we've really beat that drum.
Well, why create a hurricane center and then not listen to what the Hurricane Center people tell you?
I think everybody would prefer not to know about the potential of these disasters. Certainly for a politician, it's much easier to have your photograph taken next to a bridge or a road that you've got money for rather than a levee.
Do you think it's fair to hold any one organization or individual liable for the flooding of New Orleans?
I think what we saw in New Orleans was a failure of government at all levels. And so in terms of, if you will, the design and construction of the levees, that's the Corps of Engineers' responsibility, and they didn't deliver what they were supposed to do. And as has been shown by ourselves and other groups, the designs didn't take into account the weak soils. The state, from its side, I never really got into the levy stuff. I think complained about the costs that they were having to bear. So the state itself, through its levy boards, is also at fault. And then I think in general...
Could Ray Nagin have done anything?
I don't think he was aware.
Be careful, he's going to be the mayor for another term.
Yeah. Well, I call it the way I see it. I honestly don't think he was aware of the levee situation. You know, we tried to get stuff out of the Corps. In fact, in my book, I have an email that I repeat from a Corps of Engineers official taken about 25 days before the storm, where he says these are federally built levees; they're not going to fail.
Well, as mayor, shouldn't Mayor Nagin have been aware of what was going on? And the problem with the levees?
Well, yes and no. The situation is that you have these various levee boards, which are political entities unto themselves, And they control their own monies, they control the levies, and they control the actual footprint of the levies, so the land. And so unless he was actually going to their meetings and sitting down with their engineers, I very much doubt they would have communicated anything to him.
What about the people who are living in coastal Louisiana or in the areas that were most threatened within New Orleans? Were they aware of the threat?
No.
Were they talking about it at all?
No. What we heard time and time again from survivors after the storm was, we trusted the new levees the Corps built. We thought we were safe. We've never had water on our street, or very rarely.
Well, now we have people who are talking about all sorts of ways of preventing a similar disaster, but you expressed frustration over the Pelican Commission. What is that?
Our two state senators, right after the storm, decided to put together legislation that would have meant appropriations of funds for the recovery of Louisiana. Unfortunately, they treated this as a fishing trip to the point that they were labeled the Louisiana looters. So that action lost us a lot of credibility with many members of Congress, to the point that that's still hurting us today.
When San Francisco was destroyed by the earthquake, it was pretty much rebuilt by local business people. Is that a better approach than government doing it? If too many people in government just see this as a chance to get something for themselves?
The differences here is that in many ways our problem reflects the loss of our wetlands. And the loss of our wetlands, again, can be tied to Corps of Engineers actions, federal actions, the dredging of navigation canals, the levying of the Mississippi River, and then the exploration and mining of oil and gas, which our whole nation has benefited from. So in many ways, our problem is not of our doing, but reflects those who've benefited from our state.
And also developing the coastal areas with new housing, and hotels, and the like. Doesn't that also undermine the wetlands?
We really have very little development out on the coast. There's only one barrier island, Grand Isle, that has some development on it.
How do other places with similar situations, like the Netherlands, deal with this sort of problem?
You know, their attitude is the sea's not going to win, and we're going to do what we have to. So we will get the best of engineering, and we will make it part of our national pride. So they do risk analysis. They determine exactly how high the levees are going to be. They want 1 in 10,000 year protection. We have about 1 in 30 years. And then they build what's necessary.
How does oil and gas exploration damage wetlands?
Initially, it was through the dredging of access canals. In other words, they wanted to drill a hole. They just dug a trench right across the wetland. And then subsequently was the need for pipelines. They would dig canals across the wetlands. And in that way, you create all these various ridges and you break up the wetlands and destroy its natural functions.
And have they continued doing that all along?
No, you know, in the last maybe 20 years, there's been an effort to try and do directional drilling so you don't have to dredge any more of these canals. But unfortunately, the damage was done between those oil and gas and then the navigation canals to service that industry as well.
My guest is Ivor van Heerden, who's written with the help of Mike Bryan a book called The Storm: What Went Wrong and Why During Hurricane Katrina, the inside story from one Louisiana scientist. It is published by Viking, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Ivor van Heerden, his book, The Storm, What Went Wrong and Why During Hurricane Katrina, the inside story from one Louisiana scientist, published by Viking. You were born in Johannesburg, South Africa. How did you wind up with your job and in Louisiana?
When I did my undergraduate studies in South Africa, I fell in love with coastal sciences. And at the time, there was no university I could do a graduate degree at. So I was very fortunate through, you know, friend knowing a friend situation of being able to get to LSU, where I did my master's and PhD on the Louisiana coast. Subsequent to that, I went back to Southern Africa, and about 8 to 10 years later, I had a chance meeting with a former colleague, and he said, we're starting a coastal restoration program in Louisiana. You need to come back. It's right up your street. So I was then on a sailboat, so I sailed from the Caribbean to New Orleans and started doing what I'm doing now.
Are there a lot of people specializing in disaster science?
Not, but it's a growing field. At LSU, we've actually started a whole program known as Disaster Science and Management, and reflecting the need.
Where there's offshore drilling in other parts of the world, are we seeing similar problems?
The offshore
Africa has a lot of it.
Yeah, offshore drilling itself doesn't impact the wetlands. The pipelines that come ashore do. But most of the initial oil and gas finds were in our coastal wetlands. So only in the last 10 or 15 years have we really gone offshore.
Do the oil companies recognize the need to change their practices?
Some of them do. We're starting to find oil and gas companies actually coming out and supporting some of these new education programs to try and get the rest of the country to understand our wetlands dilemma.
Was Hurricane Katrina the big one that you'd always feared?
No, it actually wasn't.
So it could have been stronger, actually.
If Katrina had been moved a little slower and gone west of New Orleans rather than east, we would have sunk the whole city, both sides of the river, so both the so-called West Bank and the city itself.
So the French Quarter and some of the other areas that were spared would also have been flooded.
A slow-moving Category 3 could put 14 feet of water in the city, which would mean in the quarter would be up to about the balconies of the first floor.
But that would have meant that water came in differently than it did, wouldn't it?
That's assuming, that would just be from overtopping of the levees. That's not assuming any failure.
So how much overtopping of the levees was there with Katrina? Was that the bigger problem? Was it seepage through cracks in the levees?
No, the water from overtopping accounted for about 15% of the flooding.
Only 15?
Yeah. The 85% of the flooding was from the failure. We lost 169 miles of levee, you know, either failed completely or badly damaged. And that's
what did that mean? They collapsed?
Some of them, some of the earthen levees along the eastern side of New Orleans were totally flattened by the waves and the current, just not there at all. And then within the city itself, the 17th Street and London Avenue, we actually had the concrete wall segments fail. Some of them sliding sideways about 40 feet.
Do you think we put too much trust in concrete?
No, I think we where we failed was a geotechnical engineering failure. We just didn't account for the weakness of the soils, and in many cases we made engineering mistakes that led to some of this.
What does weakness of the soils mean? Was it just soft soil or soggy soil?
Imagine a soil that's a little bit more consistent than yogurt and a little less consistent than play putty, and that's what a lot of those soils are like.
You would have hoped for a little more stone and some other stuff in that soil.
Yeah, Louisiana, you got to go about 15,000 feet down before you find any stone.
This is almost like mud, actually.
This is a mud. It's a gooey mud with a lot of black organic matter in it, and it's the type of deposits that are formed in swamps, and most of New Orleans was a swamp.
Where were you when you first received reports of flooding after Katrina?
I was actually, the first inkling we got was on Monday night, and I was at the State Emergency Operations Center, and somebody came to me and said, he's just had a call from a nursing home that's taking water. He wasn't sure where it was, and he wanted to know if it was surge. And what we could point out to him that the surge event was over, that it was possibly rainfall flooding because the pumps weren't operating. Later that night, I started to get my doubts, and then got more and more doubt. And the next morning when I switched on the radio, I heard then that we were flooding.
You had gone home.
I'd gone home, yes.
Do you have any regrets about having left?
Could
you have done anything?
No. I've questioned myself over and over on this. The bottom line is where we sit, the State Emergency Operations Center, is right opposite the Corps of Engineers. They were monitoring the levees. They have a special building, bunker, and they either didn't know about it or the word wasn't getting out.
What's the current state of the levees? Have they been repaired?
The repairs are pretty much complete. The repairs were done very robustly, and in some cases they've come in with far better clay than they'd used in the past. But the bottom line is this is still a system that has no more protection than it had the day before Katrina.
So they've just really patched them up.
They've patched them up.
And you're suggesting that means that the lower Ninth Ward will be no more protected in the future, and if the storm is more powerful than Katrina, which is totally possible, more slow-moving, you say, that all of New Orleans is in danger. So are we wasting our time even patching them up?
No, because, New Orleans is very critical to our U.S. economy. 40% of our exports go out of New Orleans, most of the corn from the mid part of the country. There's an enormous infrastructure of oil and gas facilities, refineries, chemical plants. So this is an area that has a very important part to play in our energy infrastructure, and we need to rebuild it.
And are those exports coming in through New Orleans right now, post-Katrina?
Yes, the ports are operational again.
What about the wetlands? That's not something you can repair in just a few weeks, a few months. How long before they can be restored to a point where they actually will be effective?
Well, what we do know is if you can get the sediment and the nutrients out of the Mississippi River, that you very quickly see a regrowth or rebirth of many of the wetlands. We have examples in the central part of the state where we have about 10% of the Mississippi's discharge going into an area, and we have a little delta known as the Wax Lake Delta.
But I don't understand that. I always thought that the delta, the Mississippi Delta, was rich because it brought everything down, starting from Minnesota, into that one area, that it was a great place for growing things. That's where cotton was grown, wasn't it?
Yes, but that's 70 years ago. Since 1927, we've levied that river with pretty substantial levees. So the Mississippi River is actually a canal through Louisiana, and it discharges all that sediment and nutrient into 400-foot water depths of the Gulf of Mexico.
So we've engineered it into something much worse than it would have been if we just let nature handle it itself.
Yes, we basically starved those wetlands to death.
What can be done to improve the response to a catastrophe like Katrina? Who should be charged with oversight in a situation? Obviously, FEMA couldn't do the job. Do you think they've learned from their mistakes?
I'm sure everybody has learned some. As a disaster science specialist, I'm very concerned because we haven't seen anything being really done at the federal government level to try and replace FEMA or rebuild it. We know the military will be more involved in future, but they're only good at establishing rough order. They're not into shelters. They're not into humanitarian efforts.
You mentioned in your book something about a local drainage board. What's that?
All through Louisiana, there's problems with drainage. There's a lot of wetlands. So these local drainage boards are set up, and they're supposed to make sure that developers do not disrupt the local hydrology and cause people to flood more than they would in the past.
And are they effective? Is this something unique to New Orleans?
Well, no, it's throughout Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are, Some are not. Some, quite honestly, are the developers' best friends.
Well, it's my sense that what you're saying is that it is not beyond the beyond possibility that within the next 5-10 years we're going to see New Orleans go through a similar situation or an even worse situation. And what do we do then? Do we just keep on rebuilding, or do we rethink this whole thing?
We have to rethink this thing, and that's a part of the book, is to try and put a plan out there. We need to look at the Dutch, what they did. We need to understand the fact that the loss of wetlands is exacerbating the problem, and come in and build a system that has, in essence, a line in the sand levee, and then seaward of that we encourage and build new wetlands, and then seaward of that we develop barrier islands.
The levees would be like the Dutch dikes.
Yes, yes.
Well, and are the Dutch dikes much more effective because of the special situation of the Netherlands? I mean, they have the North Sea, which can get pretty boisterous.
Theirs is the southern part of the Netherlands is a delta setting, just like ours. Three big rivers, same subsidence, same soils, same peaty material everywhere. But what they've done is they build very substantial levees, but they armor them. They cover them with rock or with like a blacktop, and so they can withstand waves, and they can also withstand being overtopped. So, in fact, if we could get those sorts of levees built across Louisiana, we would go a long way to being able to stop any more of these disasters.
You live outside of New Orleans, don't you?
Yeah, I live, I'm 41 feet above sea level. I'm in the high country.
Is that something that is accidental, or did you know what you were doing when you moved there?
Well, I knew how far the surges could get, and I wanted to be just north of them, but in the country. So.
Could New Orleans just be built up? Is it? I know some of the houses now are being raised, almost being built on the equivalent of stilts. Is that a good idea?
Yes, yes.
So it can flood and still no damage will be done?
That's right. You have a reserve capacity where you can, in essence, a reservoir, you can capture that surge water and then pump it out.
But that is just a limited kind of thing. I can't imagine the whole city doing that. And also there are some great old buildings that you just can't jack up.
Some you can. There are experts who can even raise a slab house. Not all of them, but recognizing that a large number of the homes in New Orleans are going to have to be destroyed. This gives us an opportunity to come in and build smarter. They're all on pilings. Because it's this funny soft soil, they have to drive pilings in just to keep the house there. So you're just going to make them a little higher.
Well, there was talk about preventing the rebuilding in some parts of the city. Would that be a good idea?
No, because... all of it's within the levee systems. Now, some of those lower-lying areas, you may want to raise the houses a little more so that you've got that sump. But really, the potential is if you build those levees and then the wetlands protect the levees, and then the barrier islands protect the wetlands, that kind of layered system would give all the protection they needed.
Is this a unique situation? I know that California has similar concerns. What about other parts of the country?
The two areas with the biggest problems are coastal Louisiana and then the Sacramento Delta system. But as global warming increases and as sea level rise speeds up, more and more parts of the United States are going to have this problem.
I remember when Katrina hit, people in this city were wondering about what would happen if a really powerful hurricane hit. There is some flooding in some of the lower-lying areas in Brooklyn, for example. But can we be damaged in that kind of way?
Yes. The 1938 hurricane killed 600 people in New York and put a surge of 13 feet. If you had one of these Katrina-type storms or Category 4 come into New York, you could see surges up to 25 feet. Add to that then a lot of river flooding from rainfall, and the two combined, you could see water levels up to plus 30 feet, and that will flood significant areas.
So should we be building levees?
Not now. You might have to, in the not-too-distant future. I think the important thing is for people to prepare and understand and any new structure to recognize it could flood.
Well, you mentioned global warming as a key factor here. So you are saying that we're going to see more storms of this sort because the oceans are warming up?
Yes. Every rise in temperature of 1 degree Fahrenheit basically supplies enough energy for about another 100 hurricanes.
Now, what do you say to people who claim that this is all just a ridiculous scare? Michael Crichton wrote a novel. He then visited the president, and they consulted on it. There are a number of scientists who are working in Washington who say that this is really an overstated case.
Most of the scientists say that are federal scientists. Most of them that I know in academic institutions here and abroad would disagree.
So is that a problem when you say there's a Hurricane Katrina coming and go to the federal government? They don't want to listen to you because it goes against their scientific notions?
No, but I think there seems to be a reluctance on the part of the administration to acknowledge that we do have this global warming, that sea level is rising faster, and that many of the computer models are indicating we will have more major hurricanes.
Well, there's nothing I can do other than stop driving a car. Do I stop flying in planes? What else can I do?
We can look at alternative energy sources. We could be driving much smaller cars. You could go outside of the United States, and everybody's driving a small four-cylinder motor car.
Now, you said that New Orleans is just too important to America to abandon. But I'm still getting the feeling that we may wind up having to rebuild it again and again if global warming continues. So how do we deal with that? At a certain point, don't people just give up and say, well, we're going to have to move the city somewhere else?
No, I think if you very carefully engineer and the combination of levees, wetlands, and barrier islands, understanding the risks and probabilities. The Netherlands has the same sea level rise, and they end up, their designs are 1 in 10,000 year protection.
What about your home country, South Africa? Are the wetlands good there? Are the situation a little safer?
The situation is safer.
The coasts are in good shape?
The coast's in good shape. There are not many low-lying areas. I do work in one of the large wetland areas. It's a World Heritage Site where we have had to build levees on some rivers.
Ivar van Heerden has written with the help of Mike Bryan a book called The Storm, What Went Wrong and Why During Hurricane Katrina, the inside story from one Louisiana scientist. The book is published by Viking. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been really interesting.
Thank you very much for your interest.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.